Chapter 5. Use, or at least understand, firebrand tactics. I want Dr. King to know that I didn't come to Selma to make his job difficult. I really did come thinking I could make it easier. If the white people realize what the alternative is, perhaps they will be more willing to hear Dr. King. End quote. Malcolm X. Quote, human decency is not derived from religion. It precedes it. End quote. Christopher Hitchens, God is not great, how religion poisons everything. If you think I'm a dick because of what I say or do, or more likely, what other people say I say or do, then you probably don't understand what I'm doing or why. If you think I'm rude for the sake of being rude, or if you think firebrands such as me are just trying to get attention for the sake of getting attention, or for those of you who think I'm angry at your God, you need to take some time and get a better perspective. This chapter should help. Firebrand activism works. I'll show you the proof behind that statement soon. But that's not the reason I became a firebrand. The mentality came first. The proof of efficacy is just encouragement. Everything I say about religion comes from my core and is based on a deep anger at how people have used the lie of God to hurt others for millennia. Religion has no positive value. Yes, some people claim to do good in the name of religion, but this is just good people using religion as an excuse to do good, giving credit to the religion instead of the people, again. And without religion, these good people would still do good, but under a different name, as witnessed by the atheist performing charity all over the world. Religion serves no purpose except to funnel money and power away from those who need it and leaves in its wake nothing but broken promises and damaged families. Religion sucks, so I fight it with my greatest weapon, words. Never violence, because violence is the weapon of the weak and the wrong. This chapter is about those words and how and why I use them to, metaphorically, punch religion in the face. In my beginning, I had to think long and hard to remember when my firebrand style of atheism was born and why. It could have been in those early lunchroom discussions with my then-future wife and all her Orthodox Jewish friends in college. It could have been at my first job in Harrisburg, where I was the first atheist anyone in my office had ever met. Or it could have been when a Christian friend invited me over for dinner, only to secretly invite her church pastor and a bunch of friends to try and convert me. Newsflash, it didn't work. But while these were formative, no single incident was the trigger that made me the firebrand I am today. They did not teach me the effectiveness of proud truth. One source of kindling for my internal fire is a rage against the harm religion does to society. I suppose anger is not a necessary component of being a firebrand, but it helps a lot. My first time feeling this kind of anger came from my first activist action, marching for choice, safety, and bodily autonomy of women. Activism for choice first showed me how deeply religion cuts into the lives of non-adherents, and the hypocritical arguments theists use to justify clear religious oppression. I first felt then the bile bubble up from my stomach fighting for this cause for which I first raised a voice, a fist, and a picket sign. Religion's intrusion into the lives of half the population in the name of love, obviously bullshit, kindled my curiosity into the many other places religion infects our lives and led me to atheist activism. I put my righteous anger to good use for atheism for the first time several years later, fighting against an obscure bill called the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, or RFRA. The year was 1998, and I was angry at all of my allies. The prior year, the Supreme Court had overturned the national RFRA as unconstitutional, and rightly so, but for the wrong reason. Simply put, the RFRA was about changing the burden of scrutiny when it comes to religion, and only when it comes to religion. Basically, the RFRA dictates that a person has to obey the law unless the reason for breaking the law is religious, in which case the government has to prove why it needs the culprit to obey it. This version of religious exceptionalism was bound to create a second set of laws, giving a specific and legal advantage to religion while making the government bear the burden of proof even if the church broke the law. This idea was bad to the core. The RFRA wasn't overturned because it was clearly intended to advance religion. It was overturned on a technicality, and the wonderful New Jersey legislature was now considering a New Jersey version of the RFRA, which would do the same thing on a state level. It was coming to my state. I had to fight it. Fortunately, I'd already made a great set of allies. As the New Jersey State Director for American Atheists, I met regularly with fellow activists from the ACLU, People for the American Way, the New Jersey Education Association, and other liberal-ish organizations to keep each other informed and organize mutually beneficial activities. We'd been working with each other for some time by then, and I was ready for a united, concerted effort against this clear injustice. I didn't get that. What I got from my liberal friends was acquiescence. I hadn't expected the teachers' unions to take up arms for this fight, but the others caved as well, seemingly resigned to let it pass. I urged, challenged, and pleaded with them, but in the end I could not get them to join me. What I got instead was among the most distasteful responses I ever received. Quote, "Well, the truth is, we have a lot of religious members who support this bill." End quote. I remember who said those words to me, but I won't reveal the person's name. It would be too embarrassing for the person and the person's organization, the latter of which is still a strong ally. My point is that yielding to religious members silenced my allies. We could have won together, but because my allies didn't want to cause heartache to religious members, I was left to fight this major battle solo. I was alone and angry, and the fire in my belly energized me as never before. I organized a group of volunteers to canvass the state capitol with flyers opposing the RFRA. I loved my team, which was mostly made up of elderly women who were eager to stir up trouble, and in this case that meant handing out flyers until we got thrown out of the building. We called every representative in Trenton and met with those who would meet with us. We wrote to every paper in New Jersey. I even recorded a PSA for a local television station, WWOR-TV, in which I stated, quote, "While right-wing conservatives hail the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, or RFRA, as benevolent, the bill will actually create a privileged class by allowing religious people and organizations special rights to circumvent laws on discrimination, zoning, health codes, and child abuse. People should not be subject to different laws based on their religion, and the enforcement of laws should not depend on the religion of the perpetrator. American Atheists urges everyone to fight all attacks on equality, especially those dishonestly cloaked in buzzwords like religious freedom. Defeat the RFRA." End quote. We pushed hard, even going to Trenton to protest against the bill. Our last effort was made at a public hearing about the RFRA, during which I was expected to testify. American Atheists was the only organization that opposed the bill, and I was the only speaker slated to speak against it. As my volunteers and I sat in attendance, waiting for me to be called, one of our few allies in Trenton moved to table the bill and succeeded. Since this was the last session when it could be raised, this effectively killed the New Jersey RFRA. Just like that, we'd won. We cheered, knowing all the ruckus we'd raised must have made a difference. Sure, we pissed off the religious people who had heard our shouts and seen our writings and watched my PSA. But for at least the time being, the laws of New Jersey would remain fair. Until the new national RFRA was passed a few years later, ushering in the era of faith-based initiatives and corporatized religious bigotry, e.g. the Hobby Lobby decision of 2014. Following is the text of what was distributed to everyone at that hearing, the day the original New Jersey RFRA died. To members of the State House and Senate, all members of American Atheists in New Jersey, American Atheist New Jersey affiliated organizations, New Jersey church and state separation supporters and organizations, members of the press, Governor Christy Whitman. From David Silverman, New Jersey State Director, American Atheists, March 7, 1998. Ladies and gentlemen, members of the New Jersey legislature have introduced bills A.903, State Assembly, and S.321, State Senate, which, if enacted, would give special rights to the religious at the expense of non-believers. These bills, which are local versions of another bill already rejected by the Supreme Court as unconstitutional, are worded in such a way as to appear harmless while threatening the core of church-state separation. In order to fully understand the nature and intent of this special rights bill, we must first understand what religious freedoms and restrictions are currently in place. Surely, no legislator would draft a bill granting rights that already exist. Today, in this country, individuals can practice whatever religion they prefer or not at all, wear religious jewelry in public and on the job, barring uniform standards, display religious icons, nativity scenes, etc., on their own property at any time, pray, proselytize in public, including handing out propaganda, pray in schools during non-class time, in student-led groups or alone, pray to themselves anytime, anywhere, including in school during class, sue under special laws if they are not treated equally for religious reasons. In fact, the only religious restrictions aside from breaking the law in the name of religion, e.g. bombing abortion clinics, in place today are interfering with another person's right to believe or not believe as they choose, school-sponsored prayer, and giving preferential special rights to believers on the basis of their belief. The only purpose of these restrictions is to protect minorities and individuals from incursions on their freedoms as citizens. If passed, this new freedom law would eliminate that protection, allowing minorities and individuals little protection against forced, state-funded, or official religion. The bill's state. New Jersey also recognizes the right of religious freedom and affirms the inestimable privilege of worshiping Almighty God in accord with the dictates of one's conscience and provides that no person shall be deprived of that right. This passage is designed to allow religious proselytizing anytime, anywhere, and by anybody whose conscience so dictates without restriction or regard for the rights of others. This is designed for and will yield 1. Open school-led prayer to the deity chosen by the teacher, be it Christianity, Islam, Scientology, or Branch Davidianism. Remember, cults are religions too. Regardless of the wishes and beliefs of the family, this passage will open the door to pushing little-known rituals and procedures by cults and non-traditional religious groups on our children. The teacher may do as he or she pleases with full legal protection. Atheism, since it is not a religion, is not protected. Religion is therefore officially favored. 2. Similarly, schools can invite evangelists from any religion or cult to preach to children during school time without regard for non-religious beliefs or the views of parents of children. 3. Employers will be forced to give unlimited breaks to workers who need to pray. In the event the employer in any way pressures a person to work instead of praying, the worker has the right to sue the employer for damages. In this way, this passage opens the door to countless lawsuits to be filed by anyone who feels their employer did not give them enough special rights to satisfy their religious needs. 4. Again, it will be the non-religious workers who will be forced to take up the slack for these workers' breaks without the ability to get the same breaks for themselves. In effect, this law legalizes making non-believers work more than believers. Another passage in these bills read, "Actions of any government entity which are facially neutral towards religion may nonetheless burden religious exercise, and that government should not substantially burden religious exercise without compelling justification." This means no government entities can be secular in nature because this law makes secular neutrality anti-religious by definition. Absurd, isn't it? Neutrality is not anti-religious. It is exactly where the government should be on this issue. This passage essentially places religion in every state and local government office and action, leaving the non-religious relegated to second-class citizenry. No consideration is given to the fact that actively promoting religion of any kind encroaches on the rights of the non-believer. On the surface, this law is deliberately designed to look harmless. You may think some of my views are worst-case scenarios, but these are the exact situations for which this law is designed. The Christian right would not push a law that gave them nothing. We already have freedom of religion as guaranteed in the Constitution by the First Amendment. This new law would only serve to limit the freedoms of individuals, minorities, and especially non-believers. Some may suggest that the Constitution will protect us from state laws which restrict atheism or give special rights to believers. However, we need only look at the "In God We Trust" on the coins, or listen to our children pledge their allegiance to one nation under God, to know that we can't depend on that, especially with the RFA poised to gut the First Amendment. All attacks on individual rights, especially those cloaked in buzzwords like religion or freedom, must be countered not only by every non-believer, but by every U.S. citizen who cares about freedom and America. Dave Silverman, New Jersey State Director, American Atheists. Speaking of Hobby Lobby, which is the result of the national RFRA, Supreme Court Justice Elena Kagan chided Antonin Scalia about religious-based exemptions to the law, using warnings remarkably close to my language from several years earlier. Quote, "Your understanding of this law, your interpretation of it, would essentially subject the entire U.S. Code to the highest test in constitutional law, to a compelling interest standard," she told Paul Clement, the lawyer arguing against the mandate for Hobby Lobby and Conestoga Wood. So another employer comes in and that employer says, "I have a religious objection to sex discrimination laws." And then another employer comes in, "I have a religious objection to minimum wage laws." And then another, family leave. And then another, child labor laws. And all of that is subject to the exact same test to which you say is this unbelievably high test, the compelling interest standard with the least restrictive alternative, end quote. She was right. But it wasn't the Hobby Lobby case that started this. It was the RFRA that changed the law and allowed preferential treatment for religion. I stand firm in my opinion that if the national organizations favoring separation of church and state had been willing to risk pissing off some religious supporters to protect everyone's rights, we would be a stronger and fairer country today, and Hobby Lobby would be just another store instead of a national symbol for religious privilege writ large. In 2014, I was honored to speak in Washington, D.C. at a pro-ERA rally on the lawn of the Washington Capitol, sponsored by We Are Woman, at which I spoke about the RFRA and its effect on women's equality. The speech follows. "Good morning, allies. My name is David Silverman, president of American Atheists and proud feminist, and I am thrilled to be here today to talk with you about our common enemy, the religious right. Now, we are all angry about Hobby Lobby, but we must remember that they were just the plaintiff in the case, and if they weren't the plaintiff, some other company, perhaps Walmart or Chick-fil-A, would have taken their place. In truth, the Hobby Lobby decision wasn't about Hobby Lobby at all, but rather the law on which the decision was based, deceptively entitled the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, or RFRA. This law elevates religion above civil law. In other words, where religion clashes with secular civil law, the religion wins most of the time because of the RFRA. And thanks to Citizens United, corporations are people. And when corporate religious rights conflict with civil rights of the employees, the elevated religious dogma wins and, shamefully, civil rights get trampled. Given the combination of the RFRA and Citizens United, a Hobby Lobby-type decision was inevitable, and mark my words, we will see more lawsuits like this, endangering more rights for more people in the name of corporate religious rights. Who made the RFRA and still defend it today? The politicians in the pockets of the religious right, who use God to defend inequality for atheists as they use God to defend inequality for women. The Bible preaches against gender equality just as it preaches against religious diversity, and when this mentality is elevated to a higher status than civil law, as the RFRA has done, people lose rights and America becomes less free and more theocratic. The principal reason to oppose the ERA has nothing to do with public restrooms. That's a smokescreen. It's all about a legalized patriarchy bolstered by biblical sexism that says females are not equal to males, and that's what makes the ERA a separation of church and state issue, and that's what makes our movements allies against a common foe. Bible-based bigotry against women, atheists, or anyone else has no place in Washington or anywhere for that matter. Our cause is equality, and religion is the enemy of equality. by attacking and defeating religion's influence in Washington, we will eliminate almost all of the opposition to equality and achieve our common goal, a free country of equal citizens, regardless of gender or religious expression. I am honored to be working in conjunction with multiple organizations across multiple movements to preserve and promote equality for all Americans. This is a cause we can and will win by booting the morality and the mythology of yesteryear from American politics. On behalf of American atheists, I want to thank you all for fighting this fight. Thank you for your attention, and most importantly, thank you for your activism for America's fair and free future. Unfortunately, my prediction was correct, and the RFRA has taken another baby step toward establishing a special class for religious people. In Indiana, as of March of 2015, a newer version of this overtly unfair law was signed by Governor Mike Pence that allows corporations to preserve their religious right to be bigots, usurping civil anti-discrimination laws. The law was clearly set up to allow bigots to discriminate against anyone they want in defiance of anti-discrimination laws in the name of their corporate religion. The outcry over this blatant bigotry was thankfully fierce and firebrandy, and the law was soon changed, but other states are currently considering similar measures. You can be sure we will continue to see more actions like this as a result of this unconstitutional and inherently un-American act. Fighting the New Jersey RFRA was a huge learning experience for me, as this was when I discovered firsthand the efficacy of the firebrand mentality. I had always identified with the hardline approach and was well aware of the firebrands from victorious movements of the past, ACT UP, the Black Panthers, the Bra Burners. But this was the first time I implemented it and saw its effect for myself. My criticism was harsh, my words were blunt, and my accusations were direct. And the press loved it. They wrote about us. They put us on TV to show people the mean atheists fighting against religion, and all I had to do was make my case well in the time they allotted me, which I did. This brought attention to the issue far beyond what it would have been without my personal firebrand effort. Whether our publicity and campaigning was the only reason the bill failed will never be known. My point is that the bill supported religion and failed, and the only negative voice being heard in the media was my harsh but true criticism. Did our efforts single-handedly generate enough awareness of the bill's downsides to kill the New Jersey RFRA? Unlikely, but not impossible. Were we part of the reason it died? Undoubtedly. Would we have gotten that much notice if I had acted in a more congenial manner? Well, nobody congenial got noticed at all. Firebrand atheism defined. American astronomer, writer, and skeptic Phil Plait, in a now-famous speech in 2010, complained about the atheist movement's dicks, asking, "How many of you became a skeptic because someone got in your face, screaming, and called you an idiot, brain-damaged, and a retard?" He subsequently made it clear that he was not talking about anyone in particular, but this is one of those quotes that, when heard, somehow draws glances my way. To be clear, this is not what I'm about. Yes, I am loud and proud, but I don't insult just to insult. I have been married to Hildy, a theist, for 20-plus years now, largely because I've never called her names for believing in God. Firebrand atheism is simply telling the truth, with the emphasis on telling. There's a difference between telling the truth only when cornered and proactively speaking what you know to be truthful, helpful, and healthy, and the latter is where I live. Silence often implies acquiescence or even agreement, and often that makes it a lie. I tell the truth. People need and deserve to hear the truth, and the truth needs and deserves to be told. Indeed, it often needs to be shouted. My five simple precepts of firebrand atheism rely on telling versus silence, honesty versus lies, including the lie one commits when remaining silent, and correctness versus political correctness. Point 1. Tell the truth as often as possible. Some examples of true statements are, religion is a lie, and all gods are myths. These truths should be stated loudly and often, yet political correctness and religious privilege make telling these truths difficult. Tell the truth anyway. Point 2. Don't feign respect for the unrespectable. Feigning is lying. If you say you have respect for beliefs you actually find silly, you are lying. See point 1 and tell the truth. If you do not respect the belief in an invisible man in the sky, say so. Point 3. Don't accept inequality, privilege, as acceptable even if it is the norm. Accepting inequality is feigning respect. See point 2. It's not okay for some people to get something, obtain a privilege, or even be acknowledged over others by the government simply because they think a god exists. We are a nation of equals, and we need to protect that or lose it. Nobody wants to be second class, but sitting back and letting privilege run unchallenged is acquiescing to second class citizenship, even if only to a small degree. As I mentioned before, small infringements serve as precedents for larger infringements. If you don't think that's fair, then you have every right and indeed the responsibility to challenge it loudly. Silence, again, implies acquiescence, which means silent atheists imply their consent to Christian privilege. Don't do that. Point 4. Don't let the words, "I'm offended," silence you. As Richard Dawkins has said many times, there is no such thing as a Christian, Jewish, or Muslim baby. But most theists are indoctrinated from birth into believing their religion is a core facet of their identity every bit as much as genetic lineage. This does not negate the need to tell the truth. Believers are wrong, and that's the truth. But it does open the door to theists taking it personally when you criticize religion. Always make it clear that you are criticizing the belief, not the believer. Say something like, "You are many things, a father, a son, a professional, and one of those things is religious, and it is only that small portion of you that is wrong." In my experience, this works well most of the time. Remember, the truth sometimes hurts, and some believers' knee-jerk, take-it-personal reaction is nothing more than a manifestation of the brainwashing they've received. It is certainly not a reason for you to stay silent, thereby implying agreement, which is lying, about your atheism. If they can talk about their myth, you can and should talk about reality. Anything else is unequal, and disingenuous acquiescence to inequality is dishonesty. See point 3. Point 5. If someone tries to limit freedom by using religion, follow points 1 to 4, only louder. This specifically refers to the defensive nature of our firebrand atheism. For example, consider again Draw Muhammad Day. We draw him not because we know it pisses off Muslim people, but because some Muslims are trying to make us obey their laws not to draw him. We are resisting an attempt to infringe on our rights to draw what we want. And that they are telling us not to draw him because it's against their religious views is the only reason we do it. That's really all I ask of you. Tell the truth, be an honest person, and don't let the well-intentioned but wrong political correctness of today's society, which is, not coincidentally, heavily influenced by religion, squelch you. This is not an attack on religious people. This is not an insult to their God. This is the truth. We are right, and they are wrong. If we never tell them that, who will? This is why religion hates the firebrand atheist more than anyone else. We use words to shove religion off its pedestal, thereby stripping it of the privilege that insulates it from law, morality, and common sense. It's effective, and it benefits the whole movement by highlighting our issues and our existence and allowing the nice guys to garner the publicity on their own as a byproduct. We raise awareness of our existence and our issues on a national level, chipping away at the lie that we are not large enough a segment of the population to be relevant, while demanding nothing more than equality. Add on that atheism is being de-demonized to the population at large by our work, and you can see the win-win-win of firebrand atheism. Billboards and methods. Press coverage is one of the main goals of the billboards we erect. It's an important part of our messaging plan. Billboards have indeed influenced this movement, and American Atheist is far from the only organization posting them. Indeed, I think almost all of the major atheist organizations are now doing so. However, the billboards I put up have a specific set of requirements and attributes that distinguish us from the herd. The primary target market of American Atheist billboards is, again, the press. For that reason, every board is visually stimulating and, yes, intentionally edgy. The amount of exposure one gets in the press dwarfs the exposure one gets from a billboard, so our billboards are deliberately interesting enough to get shown on the news, which requires the press to show our prominently displayed name and website. In fact, we provide the graphics to the news sources with the proviso that the images cannot be cropped or covered, ensuring the website's inclusion. We also send out a press release that quickly and efficiently explains why this billboard is special enough to talk about. Observe the progression and how each board, though individually unique in message, is part of an overall narrative. You know it's a myth, a billboard near the Lincoln Tunnel calling the Nativity a myth. This is the first time any board dared to do so. The message quickly and efficiently explains why this billboard is special. This proof of concept board was on the national news in 9 different countries and appeared on The Colbert Report, The Daily Show, and Saturday Night Live. You know they're all scams, accused religion of being inherently dishonest, and was the first to implicate Islam and Judaism. This board generated enough incremental publicity to get me on the O'Reilly Factor, where the WTF face, I'll get to that soon, was born. You know there is no God, we know you're right. 5 boards in the Christian city of Des Moines, Iowa. Christian City was a phrase used by one of the billboard companies that refused our ad, and we used it for a nice press release about overcoming bigotry in Iowa, where our annual convention was being held in 2011. The press loved it. You know it's nonsense. A good old-fashioned billboard war on a national scale against the rapture scam of May 2011. Wouldn't you know, we were right. There was no rapture. Again. The press loved our caring press release to the victims of the scam after it didn't happen. Tell your family you don't believe. The first billboard aimed at encouraging discussion and self-outing around the dinner table. The first boards in Arabic and Hebrew erected in Muslim and Jewish communities, just in time for the Reason Rally. These billboards wrote their own press, as I knew they would. Even though the boards never mentioned the Reason Rally, I cited promotion of the Reason Rally, reasonrally.org, to the atheists in these religious communities, as the stated intent of the boards, so almost every news report on them mentioned the rally while showing pictures of the billboards with the web address. Atheism is patriotic, Independence Day flyovers. We wanted to have planes with this flyover banner crossing cities in all 50 states, but we knew we might not succeed. The reason? In some states, we couldn't find a single aerial banner pilot willing to promote an atheist message. This was still a win-win. Either we succeeded and got 50 flyovers, or we had a nice story about prejudice against atheists. We got the latter. Keep the merry, dump the myth. Inspired by the original Lincoln Tunnel billboard, but this one was in Times Square, just a bit edgier, and actually called on people to dump their religion. The Austin Quotes campaign ridiculed and shamed politicians for what they'd said. 6 billboards in Austin and 1 in Dallas, hitting right-wingers in Texas. Pastor Robert Jeffress and former U.S. Senator Rick Santorum actually thanked us for using them, causing us to get several nice press hits. Of course, they used our boards to get press hits for themselves, but this was predicted because that's all part of the game. In 2013, we placed a video billboard in Times Square that literally included a hand crossing out the word Christ, declaring, "Who needs Christ in Christmas? Nobody." As a result of this billboard, New York State Senator Andrew Lanza compared us to Nazis on his webpage, and in what I think, hope, was the stupidest move in his life, called for a boycott of Times Square during the holiday season in protest of our billboard. Yep, he even threatened to take away our nonprofit status. Paralyzed with fear, I immediately put the same billboard in his district and launched a press release daring him to try and revoke our 501c3 status. He responded by calling and apologizing. Are you counting? That's 1 press event for launching the billboard, a 2nd for Senator Lanza's attack, a 3rd for our response, and a 4th for his apology. 4 press hits for 1 billboard, each featuring a picture of the billboard with the website at the bottom. Everyone knows our opponent is an intolerant bigot, and we are the good guys. Swish. In 2014, we left our major cities and went to the Bible Belt. In 5 cities, we erected boards that featured a little girl writing to Santa, "All I want for Christmas is to skip church. I'm too old for fairy tales." This was the first time we placed billboards near schools and openly targeted families, which sent the press into high gear and prompted two rebuttal billboards from our religious opponents and a petition, each of which resulted in press attention for us. What I loved most about this campaign was the idea that the little girl is too old for God, but not for Santa. What kind of discussions did that prompt? In preparation for our 2015 convention, we put up the same little girl on the same billboard in Memphis. After 2 weeks, we changed the language to Arabic, bringing a new wave of attention from the press just in time for the event. Most outlets showed both versions of the board. Each advertising event is a press event, providing us a level of market penetration and saturation that no billboard alone can deliver or even approach. The billboards are designed that way and work just great. We tell reporters what's different, what angle the billboard promotes, provide some good quotes, and let her rip. The press gets a great story that's easy to write and receive lots of social media shares and likes, which incites them to write the next story. And we get our message out via a far more effective medium. As time progresses, the efficacy of the billboards fades. We will have to get increasingly provocative until the press loses interest. But remember, the press is not proactive, it's reactive. So when the demand for stories about our billboards fades, it will be because we are succeeding and the shock of atheists speaking out is wearing off. Overton Window shifted. The secondary target of our billboards is closeted atheists. Some 99.9% of atheists are not involved with the organized movement, a number that has to change for us to succeed, and using the press to carry our message, "We exist and are on your side," is an efficient way of addressing this market. Admittedly, when I go on Fox News, I reach far more believers than atheists, closeted or not. But I do sometimes get additional press coverage after going on Fox News, and for this and other reasons I will explain soon, I go. Incidentally, people often ask why I go on Fox News instead of CNN, for instance, as if I have a choice. I go where I'm invited, and since controversy gets ratings, I get invited to go on Fox News more often. The golden moments occur when liberal-leaning shows such as The Daily Show with Jon Stewart feature my Fox News appearances, as much of their audience is atheistic. Stephen Colbert, while making fun of an appearance of mine on Fox News, gave me my Twitter handle by calling me Mr. Atheist Pants. I have another goal when I go on conservative-leaning shows, to encourage atheists to watch. Most atheists don't watch Fox News ever, and as a result, they never actually hear what these folks are saying. Sun Tzu wrote in The Art of War, "If you know your enemies and know yourself, you will not be imperiled in 100 battles." How else, had I not gone on O'Reilly, would atheists have known that he is willing to change the definition of his religion, Christianity is a philosophy, to maintain his privilege? We must watch these guys at least occasionally so we can better know how willing they are to cloak immorality in religion. This is where we reap a huge benefit from YouTube. It allows appearances to live forever, facilitates comments and discussion, and enables atheists everywhere to see for themselves what we fight without having to sit through an entire episode. The tertiary target for our ads is the theists, but my intent is not to convert them. Atheists will never convert anyone with billboards. However, I will get them to talk or complain about us, and when they complain, they will often find themselves doing so to closeted atheists in their families and circles of friends. Their complaints are my sales pitches. The perfect situation is a preacher complaining about our billboards in a sermon, advertising the movement's existence to the closeted atheists in the pews, arming and motivating believers to go home and complain about us, i.e., advertise us, to their friends. The theists are marketing tools and will be treated as such. American Atheists, atheists.org, is a cause organization. If we were a for-profit corporation, our advertising would be all about showing us above our competitors in a marketplace. But we are not competing with other organizations. As I've said before and will continue to say, I'm not in this for American Atheists. I'm in it for America. American Atheists is a tool I am using for the benefit of the country as a whole. This means we have to thrive, but so do the other players in the movement, and it's my responsibility as president of American Atheists to help everyone in the movement. Do I? Let's look. We already know controversy sells, and we already know the press love to write about it. So as a quick example, let's look at the Christmas 2012 billboard, Dump the Myth. This was a huge board with a picture of Santa and a crucified Jesus in Times Square. The Catholic League had a fit, and the press had a field day. The CNN Belief blog featured a great article on the billboard, featuring the graphic, of course. The implied intent was to focus on the controversy of the factions of organized atheism. However, the piece actually communicated a story of diversity within the atheist movement, highlighting our breadth for all to see. In the article, CNN reporter Dan Merica talked about our billboard and compared our efforts to those of other atheist organizations, specifically the Harvard Humanists' interfaith efforts to raise money for charity and the Secular Student Alliance's Christmas parties. In the end, everyone in the article looked good. That's a positive story for the Harvard Humanists and the SSA on the front page of CNN.com that would not have happened without the Dump the Myth billboard in Times Square. Yes, we look harsh in the story compared to the nice guy atheists, which again tells America there are nice guy atheists. American Atheist stands by what we do, and I mean every word I say, but I also know well that I highlight the nice side of the movement by being assertive. I may be called a dick, but I help nice guys succeed. Our efforts give them attention they wouldn't otherwise have received. Another example of how the diplomats are the beneficiaries of the firebrand. Data proves being a firebrand works. I am asked often, what is the point? Why do what I do, and why do it just the way I do it? My detractors in the movement, who sometimes seem a bit too anxious to throw stones, often throw out, what will that accomplish, when I launch some campaign or initiative they don't like? First of all, the big picture is atheist normalcy. We aren't looking to outlaw religion or even to shame believers into the closet, although the latter will probably happen over time, and I'm okay with that. The big picture is the normalcy of atheists, which includes the elimination of bigotry against us. I liken our big picture ideal to where the Jews are now in the United States. Today, anti-Semitism is met with negative consequences, so most anti-Semites think twice about openly trumpeting their hatred of Jews. That's our endgame, too. For atheism to be considered a normal part of America, and for open bigotry against us to be considered a negative in polite society. So how do we get atheism normalized? Well, the best way to normalize it is to de-demonize us, and that means de-demonizing the word. Again, that's why I'm such a proponent of using the word atheist. That's why using the word in everyday conversation is important. The more the term is used, the more normal it becomes, the weaker it makes bigotry against us. By using it, we de-demonize us and help to defeat the bigotry against us in America. How openly and frequently the word atheist is used can be seen as a barometer of how well we're doing. But does firebrand atheism have an effect? And if so, how can we tell? It's a good thing we have data. Atheists love data. Let's look at Figure 6, located in the bonus PDF. This chart shows the use of the word atheist in search queries over about 10 years. I annotated the chart to make a few observations. Note the horizontal floor lines. They show how low the search volume goes when no major news stories are happening, which I consider a barometer of atheist normalcy. I've noted Christmas for every year because the Fox News war on Christmas always spikes searches for the term then. This is what I call the O'Reilly factor. You can see how the release of the God Delusion, Letter to a Christian Nation, and God is Not Great seem to coincide with a rise in the floor, as one would expect. Several excellent books by the best authors in the industry, all going on book tours and TV interviews, should have had exactly such an effect. Another advertising event, the major London bus ads exclaiming, "There's probably no God," seemed to do quite well in contributing to a Christmastime spike in the U.S. that raised the floor again, to a point at which it stayed until American Atheists put up its first billboard, "You Know It's a Myth." That coincided with the highest peak in the searches since the bus campaign 2 years earlier. Note how Christmas 07, 08, 09, 11, 12, and 13 immediately precede a decline near the floor. Not so in 2010. due apparently to the you-know-they're-all-scams board and the infamous O'Reilly tie goes in, tie goes out, more on that soon, segment in January. This is a telling data point, as it is the only exception to the down-after-Christmas rule. Additionally, a Google search reveals that no other atheist-specific press event seems to have happened in that time frame. The Billboard O'Reilly event seems to be single-handedly responsible for this uptick. The same goes for the pre-Reason Rally Arabic-Hebrew billboards in 2012. This brings into question how ads by other atheist organizations have fared in this measurement. If the height of the peak for a month in which only American atheists had activity is not different from the peaks for months in which efforts were also made by others, it suggests that the activities by the other organizations have a negligible effect. In other words, it seems that the marginal increase of the nice guy activity is rather inconsequential for raising the atheist bar. Many American atheist billboards appeared in 2011, each one corresponding to an uptick in searches, leading to a new floor 33% higher after my first full year as president. You can almost see our activity pull up that floor, twice as large as the first two rises, and in a fraction of the time. After the atheist bench was installed, American atheists experienced a lull in active publicity. Note the corresponding dip below the floor during that time. This suggests that not only is American atheist activity responsible for the upticks, but the lack of activism is responsible for downturns, advancing my hypothesis of a causal relationship of firebrand activity to nationwide interest in atheism into the realm of dependence. That is, it seems, from these admittedly few data points, that nationwide interest goes down when we go quiet for a long period of time, which also makes sense. Yes, I know many factors are at play here. I'm not saying this is exhaustive research. I am saying that there appears to be a strong correlation between searches for the word atheist and the activism of American atheists since I took over in October of 2010. Proof of causation? No. But this is definitely supportive data for the assertion that loud atheism leads to more people looking at us. To give you a sense of scale, I also performed a comparison between the terms atheist, Christian, Catholic, Muslim, and Jewish. See Figure 7 in the bonus PDF. This shows you how far we have to go compared to the other terms. Note, Christian is also a name, so searches for people named Christian would affect the search. This is just for illustrative purposes. I will tell you how warm and fuzzy I get when I look at the steady decline for the top three lines of Christian, Catholic, and Jewish. Muslim is steady and, almost imperceptibly due to the scale, only atheism is rising. Some might say that this increase in searches for atheist is just a result of the growth of atheism, and that the rise in people searching for atheist is just a symptom of the growth of the whole movement. I don't think so. If the whole movement was rising, and the searches were rising along with it, then we would expect to see other terms with similar curves. But that's not what we find. In the bonus PDF, Figure 8 shows the search results for the same times for similar words. Searches for the word humanist, which one would expect to see increase because of all the humanist ads that went up, actually decreases over time, with its floor on a steady decline. Searches for agnostic and secular remain steady. Only atheist increases. Obviously, the change is word-centric and not movement-centric. This shows us that the growth of atheist is unique, not a result of a rising tide that raises all boats, an increase in general internet usage, or other factors that would increase the use of multiple terms. But is it because of American atheists? Do we have any correlation between searches for the word atheist and American atheist activity? In the bonus feature? Yep. Figure 9 in the bonus PDF shows searches for American atheists with another graph of the searches for atheist right above it. Every peak in searches for American atheists since I took office correlates with an ad campaign, and all but one correlates with an increase in searches for atheist. The exception is the Atheism is Patriotic flyovers in July of 2011. It should be noted that although the scale seems to indicate the number of searches for American atheists is about the same, this is not true. Searches for American atheists are minute compared to the number of searches for atheist, so the number of searches for American atheists is not a major component of the searches for atheist. Figure 10 in the bonus PDF shows the same searches on the same scale to prove this point. Here's more. Since 2010, the number of atheists identifying themselves as such has shown a substantial increase. Note the Pew 2012 data in Figure 11 in the bonus PDF. The middle line is the same middle line from Figure 6, showing the peaks and floors of the rising use of the word atheist in searches, seemingly caused by American atheist campaigns, with only the timescale retained. You can see how nicely this ties into an increase in the number of people calling themselves atheists. The slope of the line representing the people who self-identify as atheists, as opposed to nuns, increases at the same time as searches for the word atheist. Agnostic as an identifier follows the same pattern over the same period. This is interesting, since again there's no increase in searches for the word agnostic in the same time frame. So, while use of the word atheist seems to follow searches on the word itself, use of the word agnostic seems to correlate with searches on the word atheist. This implies that people are searching for atheist after seeing our ads, then using agnostic as a stepping stone term, or they are looking at the movement and deciding to take a softer label. This is more data suggesting hardline atheism is helping the movement's softer side. I'm not suggesting that searches for atheists will always rise in line with people identifying as atheists. Rather, I'm showing the same activism that apparently increased the searches in this case seems to have also resulted in an increase in the number of people identifying as atheists, which makes sense. This growth is important because it creates a snowball effect. The rise in conversation with and about atheists will lead to a greater awareness of atheism among the general population, which will lead to the de-demonization of atheism in general. In turn, this will relieve some of the societal pressure others feel to stay in the closet, yielding still more out and proud atheists. So let's bring it home. If American atheist activity is directly influencing the rise of people calling themselves atheists, then Figure 12 in the bonus PDF actually represents the quantitative impact American atheists' firebrand atheism is having on the country. For those using atheist as an identifier, the difference between where the line was trending before our activity and the uptick apparently caused by our activity leads to an increase from 2.1 to 2.4%, which yields about 1 million Americans who call themselves atheists because of American atheists. Additionally, if you look at the data point for agnostic in 2009 to be an outlier, a reasonable but impossible to prove assumption for this exercise, the number of people who call themselves agnostic as a result of American atheist activities goes up from 2.9 to 3.3%, or an increase of 1.25 million more people, as shown in Figure 12 of the bonus PDF. Here's a little more support for my argument. A USA Today article is one of the many places you can go to find positive news about how atheists are gaining acceptance in the same time frame as our activities. Quote, "For the second time in less than a year, the Gallup poll reports a majority of Americans would vote for an atheist for president." Quote, "We have seen an enormous change over time in the willingness to vote for an atheist," Carolyn Bowman, American Enterprise Institute for Public Policy Research. Additionally, a 2015 Gallup poll shows 58% of Americans would vote for an atheist, an all-time high, up from 54% in 2011 and 45% in 2007. Not only does the data support my assertion that loud atheism attracts more attention, it also correlates with an increase in acceptance, which supports my position that we are successfully de-demonizing the word, leading to less of a stigma toward and a greater acceptance of atheism, changing religion from without. The rise in assertive advertising positively correlates to a rise in searches, which positively correlates to an improved reputation. Therefore, charges that I may be turning people off from atheism, thus worsening the reputation of atheists, appear to be totally unsupported. What is supported, and strongly, are the following points. Point 1. American atheists' firebrand activism has a distinct, unique, and measurable effect on the searches of the word atheist. Point 2. Searches for atheist correlate to growth in self-identification of both atheists and agnostics. Point 3. Growth in searches for atheist but not other like terms implies the growth is word-centric. Point 4. Word-centric growth of searches for atheist and not humanist in the face of ample billboard and TV advertising for humanist groups implies a much higher level of efficacy for atheist billboards than for humanist efforts, the latter of which seems to have no effect on the searches for the word humanist. This makes sense. Humanist billboards don't make news, probably because nearly 90% of the population doesn't understand the word. Point 5. As our activity seems to be affecting the growth of agnostic as an identifier, it makes sense to argue that atheists are finding the movement because of us and then finding their place within it, benefiting the whole movement. Again, the diplomats are the beneficiaries of the firebrands. Point 6. Claims that we sometimes hurt the movement are seemingly unfounded. And in fact, as atheism grows, respect for atheism grows, and willingness to vote for atheists, as opposed to nuns, grows. Again, this just makes sense. Thus, American atheists' firebrand atheism appears to be directly improving the country for atheists. This is exactly as I predicted, exactly what I've been saying, and all according to plan. I asked Dr. Ryan Cragen, Associate Professor of Sociology at the University of Tampa and author of What You Don't Know About Religion But Should, to comment specifically on my data for this book, and his reply confirms what I've asserted. Quote, "It is clear that there has been a very strong and consistent correlation between the interest in atheism generally and interest in American atheists specifically over the past 3 years. Causality can be more clearly determined when it comes to interest in the organization itself. The activities and events of American atheists regularly result in heightened interest in the organization." End quote. Serious social progress is not achieved without the help of those who raise their voices and their metaphorical fists. Malcolm X let the country hear Black America's righteous anger in plain words and sometimes brutal honesty, all the while knowing, by moving the Overton window, he was making Martin Luther King Jr. look moderate. ACT UP raised awareness of the fundamental immorality of those who were both anti-gay and gay by exposing and outing people. Its activism brought the need to come out of the closet into the forefront of the discussion, and yes, by shifting the Overton window, it made those less fanatical gays look closer to the mainstream. New York radical women, the bra burners, similarly delivered their extreme message of equality to America while making those less radical feminists seem much less threatening. These activists weren't considered the nice guys of their respective movements, but their impacts were unquestionable. This is why I believe it's our duty as atheists to our country, our movement, and the theists themselves to shout the truth from the rooftops and wear it on our sleeves. Everyone needs the truth exposed, except the liars. On the WTF face. I certainly can't write a book without discussing the what the fuck meme. One of the perks of this job is being the face of American atheists, both literally and figuratively, but this meme face concept took the expression to a whole new level. I'd been on the O'Reilly Factor once before as a spokesperson for the now defunct Godless Americans Political Action Committee. A clip from this visit was used by Senator Elizabeth Liddy Dole in her 2008 campaign to make her opponent Kay Hagan look like an atheist supporter, a strategy that backfired miserably because the good people of North Carolina are not all raging atheophobic bigots as Ms. Dole apparently is. Hagan was flooded with over 3,600 donations in the 48 hours following Dole's ad from atheists and theists alike. In that first episode some 10 years ago, my off-camera contact with Bill was brief and insubstantial. However, this time, before a 2011 appearance about the scams billboard, I had a few minutes to talk with him before the show. The surprise was that he was knowledgeable. He knew about Madeline, past President Ellen Johnson, and others from the movement. He was calm and rational. I went on the show, admittedly disarmed, expecting a civil, intelligent conversation. Silly me. During the show, I tried to corner him into admitting he was not being skeptical about his own religion. I was about to succeed when he went into defense mode and exclaimed, "I'll tell you why religion's not a scam. In my opinion, tide goes in, tide goes out. Never a miscommunication. You can't explain that. Okay, here was this intelligent man giving the stupidest argument for the existence of God. I don't know, therefore God did it. Which is the Neanderthal-era mentality that ignorance is equal to evidence, to which I earlier referred. This total non sequitur to our off-camera discussion caught me by surprise. So I made the face. He was playing me. He was feeding me a line to divert me from the subject. I responded with the analogy of Thor, explaining O'Reilly's argument could be used for any god. At any rate, the what-the-fuck face, a cartoon version of my face, quickly went viral, thanks to the people at Reddit, our atheism. At first it was just the standard face, but then it evolved into multiple faces, gender expressions, and all sorts of designs. They had fun with it. Yes, it strokes my ego, but it's far more important than that. The meme helps normalize atheism, at least to some degree. It reaches a whole new audience of internet users who are not involved with, or even aware of, the atheist movement. And should they find out about its origin, it informs and reminds them that we are here working for their rights. It also reminds atheists of our penetration into the mainstream when they see my face being used outside the movement. I like it and promote it because it's guerrilla-esque in its penetration. Masked by a funny face is a serious statement about religion and the lies, deceptions, and diversions that some will use to protect religious, in this case Christian, privilege.